This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Gary Smith.
Happy Sunday from the altar of Bard. And Gary, it's great to see you. And even though Adam was running around the country promoting his latest tome, we've decided to soldier through.
Yes, everything reminds me of something. Go check it out now at adamcarolla.com and order. We got the audiobook coming soon with Adam and Awesome Dawson. It's good stuff.
It's excellent. And I think we're going to do a good quick hit here on Sunday. And the case that I'm interested in is Steve Bannon. What do you say about that, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one that I have been following more so today than over the course of the week, if I'm honest. It was covered, but not so carefully by all the outlets. But today, I'm excited to talk about it.
You know, it's interesting because we could talk about the January 6th committee, but one of the practical consequences of that committee, legal consequences, is their subpoena power. And for those of you who aren't in the weeds, they issued subpoenas, and they've issued subpoenas to Mark Meadows, Dan Scavino, Peter Navarro, Steve Bannon, amongst others. The reason we know, or I list those names, are famously, at least, Mark Meadows and Peter Scavino have not been and apparently will not be prosecuted for failure to comply with the subpoena. Peter Navarro, as you might remember, was just arrested in rather spectacular, and I mean it in the true sense of the word, spectacular fashion, to which the judge presiding over that case rhetorically asked why they didn't just phone him up and let him self-surrender. And then lastly, this week, Friday, for those of you who watch or listen to this podcast, know that I always talk about, in somewhat high-profile cases, Friday afternoons are the kiss of death.
Sure.
And sure enough, they generally wait, have their lunch on Fridays, and then convict on Friday afternoons. The corollary to that is if the jury does not come back on a Friday afternoon and wants to come back on Monday over the weekend, a lot of times that'll indicate to you that there is a legitimate source of split amongst the jurors. And it's just something that I've anecdotally said before. Gary knows this.
Yeah.
Sure enough, they were out for 3 hours, including the lunch break, and came back and convicted him on, I believe, two counts.
Correct.
And for contempt of Congress. Now, interestingly, this is generally a fairly simple case for the prosecution. Was there a valid order? Did the defendant or the accused not comply with that order? There you go. I will tell you, however, in this case, there were some great legal issues, not the least of which was in that litany of names that I just gave you. They did not file, Department of Justice did not bring charges against Mark Meadows or Mr. Scavino.
Right.
And both of them, especially Meadows, cooperated, produced documents, however, asserted executive privilege. Both of them worked for Trump at the time period that they're looking into, namely January 6th and before or after. But Navarro did. Yeah. Navarro gets indicted. Meadows and Scavino do not get indicted. Bannon wanted to plumb that assertion of executive privilege. Bannon wanted to also say, rely on what's called an advice of counsel defense. He had Robert Costello, a very able criminal defense lawyer representing him, who was advising him, and he wanted to use that. The judge did not allow that, although there was, they kind of did a backdoor approach on that, but he did not put on any defense and did not take the stand and was convicted. But Gary, there was an interesting quote from the judge.
Yeah, the judge went on to say, I was bound by D.C. circuit precedent that I'm not even sure is right.
And what he's talking about is a case that's over 50 years old that I think the judge is correct. I don't know that that case is maybe a precedent right now, but it probably has been eroded in the years since. And I'm not so sure that the Circuit or the U.S. Supreme Court would not reverse it. There are assertions of privilege. There is reliance on counsel. All of those things in a contempt case, I think, are going to be ripe for an appeal in this case. And it would not surprise me in the least if this case was reversed.
It's very interesting. And the case that that he's referring to is over 60 years old. And just because it's fun to say, it deals with a Detroit mobster and bootlegger named Peter Horseface Licavoli. So, that doesn't exactly...
Oh, you read the comments section today, we're going to hear a lot about that.
Absolutely. It's a very interesting one. He's facing a minimum of 30 days in prison from what I've read, but he's indicated and his team has indicated that they are going to appeal. So that would, if that were to come to pass, it would probably be several years down the road.
And interestingly, even though he didn't testify, he did indicate yesterday, I believe, I don't know who he was talking to, but he talked to some outlet and indicated, as you and I have discussed, be careful what you wish for, because if the Republicans take back the House, he's already telling the January 6th committee to preserve all your documents, right?
Right. Absolutely. He's going to try to go ahead and pull an Uno reverse card on them if internet parlance is to be used.
Yeah. And it would not also surprise me if in November the Republicans take over the House, that there is then a new committee formed for January 6th, which will then have jurisdiction over an investigation. And I've indicated before, he obviously is going to appeal this conviction. And I think one of the reasons one of his lawyers called it bulletproof, I think the fail-safe thought is here that even if the appeal on a legal basis was not would not go anywhere, that one of the other bases for that they were not allowed to get into is that he said, Bannon said, that now, sometime right on the heels of the start of this trial, that Trump had waived executive privilege. They wouldn't let him get into that as well. And it'll be interesting to see the legal machinations if the Republicans take back the House, if the Republicans form a new committee, and if they nunc pro tunc, which means after the fact, void the subpoena to Bannon, or subpoena Bannon anew and purge the previous contempt. And there are some real interesting legal machinations there if that in fact comes to pass.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that front, but it doesn't seem outside the realm, with the midterms approaching, there's certainly a very real possibility that all of those things that you hypothesize about could come to pass.
Yeah, and it's criminal contempt. I've tried criminal contempts and obstruction cases in the past that are politically charged, and they generally do break down along political lines. Although in this case, you had a Trump-appointed judge who did not give Bannon everything he was looking for. So when everybody talks about, and I even refer to it as a Trump-appointed judge as opposed to a Obama-appointed judge or a George W. Bush-appointed judge or Reagan-appointed judge, to some degree, those tend to deflect from what the reality is that while a judge may reflect the political philosophy and the writings that are consistent with the person appointing them or the administration appointing them, there's no way to predict with any kind of certainty of what's going to happen or how it's going
to
run.
Yes. And to your point, he is one of only two judges, I believe, out of 22 total who has issued favorable rulings for January 6th defendants in other cases, not in this one, but he is in that
District of Columbia.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so the way this plays out, it's going to be fascinating from a legal standpoint.
Absolutely. You sent me a clip of a United States representative with her thoughts. You want to check that out?
Yeah, I think we'll close with the discussion of this because it's interesting that Tulsi, I don't think she's in Congress anymore, but this is her take on things.
My mistake, former, correct.
No matter what you think or feel about Steve Bannon, the fact that he has been found guilty of contempt of Congress, yet others have faced no consequences at all, people like James Clapper, for example, sat before the U.S. Senate under oath and lied directly about an NSA program that was conducting mass collection on millions of Americans. Or John Brennan, for example, as CIA director, he spied on Senate staffers, lied about it, and also broke into Senate computers to read emails from whistleblowers to members of Congress. Now, both Clapper and Brennan kept their jobs and to this day still have faced no consequences at all, what to speak of being charged and prosecuted and found guilty of the crimes that they committed. Now, this is just the latest example, unfortunately, of how our Department of Justice has become a political weapon being used by those in power to go after their political enemies.
So, you know, I know she's a lightning rod, and I know people on one side of the aisle are dismissive of her. Others think she's a breath of fresh air. I understand that. But just listen to what she said. I mean, she's citing various cases in which there have been serious, serious allegations. And for food for thought, I think she's got a point that should be discussed and does lead into this, whether or not the DOJ has been weaponized. And it goes for both parties. So no matter what you want to say, it does. It cuts both ways.
It is food for thought, absolutely, and should be discussed. I'm glad we're bringing it up here, and I hope that our audience will continue to explore on their own.
You got it. Gary, thank you. This was short, sweet, and it was a fun Sunday, as always.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you so much for making the time, and we'll see you all this week for more Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, as well as the big show later in the week with Adam.
You got it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.